Welcome to Dominate for Two, a War Machine and Hordes podcast.
I'm Alex.
I'm Mark.
And I'm Benjamin.
And today we are going to talk about Lock and Load, get Mark's recap of his Masters run, how the event went for him, and a picture of Lock and Load overall. And then we're going to be going into how to really get your ideal experience out of a tournament or a convention, going to any sort of large event and ensuring that you're having like the kind of fun you're really aiming to have and get your optimal enjoyment, how to pick an event, how to pick the tournaments or courses or whatever it is you're up to in that event. That's really a match for, you know, your kind of fun.
Actually, and real quick, before we get into that, I just want to quote the immortal poet LL Cool J and say, don't call it a comeback. We've been here for years.
Also, I'd like to clarify for you amazing, crazy, cool future people listening to this that we are referring to Lock and Load 2018 in this podcast.
Oh my God, Ben with the timeliness.
What?
But yeah, let's get into it. So I guess I just want to preface this with, I came in with like virtually no prep for this year's Lock and Load. I like my schedule had just not been working with the other like competitive War Machine players in the area. And I just like wasn't getting games in. In fact, I was painting a different hobby game that shall not be named as a painting project.
How so dare you have other interests?
I felt like I was going to go into this and bomb like crazy. I knew it from the get-go. But I just went in with the plan of having a good time. For those of you who aren't familiar with it, I have a ongoing shark bet with Chris Danner. Whoever does the worst has to wear a shark costume and cheer the other on at Lock and Load. And so I was looking forward to that, hoping that I would be able to scrape by and just do slightly better than Chris did, so that I wouldn't have to wear the shark suit.
That did not happen.
Yes, yeah, so spoilers. Whoa.
From now on, you have to introduce yourself as Shark Giro.
Oh, no. People were calling me Mark the Shark, which I could get down with. Makes me sound like a 1920s gangster or something.
Or at least plausibly good at this game.
Ooh, hateful.
Oh, just to the heart of the matter.
But yeah, so I basically came in to play the Masters. If I won the whole thing, I got to play in the IG. But unfortunately, I have a habit of top eighting, but not reliably top threeing. So I didn't really farm the points I needed for this year. I'm really hoping to do that better, because I think that IG, at least from this year, is going to rapidly overtake War Machine Weekend as like the premier like invitational tournament. Which is something I'm excited for. I mean, not that I don't want to see War Machine Weekend succeed, but I think having two like high quality invitational tournaments is always better than just having one that I have access to.
I've always characterized it as, you know, we have three major circuits that we're interested in the United States. There's War Machine Weekend, Iron Gauntlet, and then the World Team Championship and the build-up to acceptance on a team for that and then the prep for that. You know, in my mind, it's always existed as two separate circuits, and I genuinely do want very much for both to succeed. Iron Gauntlet here being the newcomer, but, you know, the more levels we have available to engage with the game and, like, really express competitive gaming at its highest, the better.
Yeah, and like I think beforehand, IG was kind of held back by the 16 spots and the fact that it was tied to a somewhat dysfunctional format.
Yes.
But now that it's using an actual, what I would call proper format, it's miles better than it was. But yeah, I'm very excited to work my way into going and playing in it next year. But let's get into it. So Masters starts Friday morning. I flew in the night before, said my hellos. I thought we were going to be at the old venue, the one in like the middle of downtown. And I was pleasantly surprised to see that I had accidentally booked the exact same hotel that the con was at.
Well done.
which stoked me to no end, because last year it was like a 20-minute walk to the venue, and like I didn't feel like paying for Uber back then. I would do it now, but that's just because I've gotten lazier as I've gotten older. But yeah, so I just kind of like rolled on down. They did the keynote, which if you didn't see, there's a lot of goodies. There are a few changes in the schedule. The Merc stuff got rolled back a lot, and it got changed from Pirates to Steelhead. From what I've heard, this is a combination of Monpok and just like in-house production issues. I'm not entirely sure on the details, but I'm sure we'll get a better picture later on. But lots of exciting stuff from the Circle CID. Infernals. I'm so down for Infernals. That might actually get me to move on from Trolls. Like, I've been tempted to go back to Menoth, but Infernals. I just want to go full on Hellraiser on people.
But the Order of the Wall initiates are coming out.
I'm actually surprisingly stoked for them. I think they fill a good place in the Faithful Masses theme.
Yeah, I think they'll be fun.
But we'll see where that goes. But once the thing finished, Reg started, and we got down to playing War Machine a little bit later than ideal. I think we were supposed to start at like 11. I think we didn't actually start till 1. I can't remember the exact timing, but
that's about standard lock and load late.
Yeah, and let me pull up my document, because I actually wrote down the names of everybody and what played and everything.
Whoa, who is this man?
Yeah, so round one, I got paired into Gareth Anders. I believe he's a Vancouver native. He had Crix. I think it was the standard Gatsby 3 Slayer spam, and then the Scar 3, not Broken Coast, Slaughter Fleet list that has been making the rounds. And this was on Outlast. And one of the weird features of the board as it was set up is there's these two kind of like destroyed house obstructions. One was like parked on top of a flag. The other one was parked such that it made like a natural choke point to control with the other piece. He won the roll off and decided to go first. I decided to pick the side that gave me the house that I could hide a solo behind and like easy access to control the choke point. And so
And you're playing the same troll lists you've been playing for a while now, Madrak 1 and Kolgrimma.
Sorry, I completely jumped the gun on that. So Kolgrimma, minor alteration. Earthborn Storm turns into Bomber Mistspeaker. I originally had Linus and Edria because being able to choose the column on your crit stationary sprays is super funny. But then I played one game into a Stealth Warcaster, and I was like, wow, this sucks. And change it up. And the Mistspeaker gives me just better stealth solutions. And more magic weapons, which is always nice, but the sprays kind of already cover that. But so, I go second. I am playing Madrak 1 into his Scar 3, and I pick the side that lets me bunker up. And I basically set up this situation where my Raiders are a first wave jam unit that set the line of scrimmage, and I use that to jam the champs down the choke point. And I put the Glacier King on the other side of the house obstruction such that it's basically physically impossible for him to contest my flag without getting knocked down by the Glacier King's Animus. At which point I just trivially kill it and move on with my life. And Gareth had some really bad dice in some crucial moments that basically let the game become more dominant, but I think just the terrain and the fact that I went second meant that without above average dice from him, I think I was just going to be able to walk him down just by the nature of the terrain and the fact that I was going second.
Because you're really solidly in control of the scoring rhythm there at that point with the terrain as is.
Yeah. So like he finally kills the Glacier King on the turn I score out is basically how it ends. And it was a pretty gnarly slog. I feel bad for participating in that game, but that was the terrain as it was placed. It was just pretty brutal, I think. Just geography OP.
So you're 1-0 at approximately 3 in the afternoon. What's next?
And I believe Chris and Jaden had also won their games. Jaden was also in the shark bet this year. So what's it called? Continue on to round two. I play against Florida. Well, I don't even know if he's from Florida, but I know he plays like in the greater Florida area because I spent time with him at Crucible. Rian Nopke.
Oh, yeah, he's a Florida guy.
Yeah, I didn't know if he was actually Florida or just like was in driving range of the Florida events. So he's playing Rhett. He's got Viros and Assyria. And I make a horrible mistake. I drop Cole Grima for whatever reason. And he puts down Viros. And Viros is quite possible. Like, and this is like, I either assassinate you or lose kind of Cole Grima list. I just thought there was never going to be a world where he would play Viros, but he did. Viros is really tanky. 15, 18. He's got like 18 boxes D-cell. Like that man will not die. And I get like really flustered and panicked, and I throw away Mulg on top of two for like a 9% assassination. And I think I do like exactly one box of damage to him.
Wow, that's awful.
But then in the process of killing Mulg, and jamming up my bomber, he puts Viros on Viros on one camp with no D cell. And so I just unjam my Mauler. My Mauler throws one of the lights into the other light that's jamming the bomber. Kogrima charges one of them, sprays Viros stationary, and pretty much nearly kills him. And then the bomber just aims and one shots him. At that point, it was like, since he didn't like put up D cell, it was like a 70%er. It was pretty high odds. I think he got like super like tunneled on like killing Mulg and just like getting in my face. And like, I think he just like felt that once Mulg died, Colgrima wasn't going to be able to do anything. But yeah, I was just able to charge her. And a lot of people forget that like she will do literally what Mulg does. So you got to stay out of 19 of her, or 18.
You're not super safe from a caster that can move 15 inches in a given turn. Or no, I guess she moves 12.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Up to 12.
Yeah, that's a ways.
Yeah, so it was an assassination that I shouldn't have been given, but I think I inadvertently got him to panic.
Well, and you're also just going to get some proportion of those in any convention, like, in any tournament run, you'll get games that you lost that you shouldn't have, and some that you win that you maybe shouldn't have, or at least over a certain number of games, it'll just happen.
Yeah. I'm just not sure what wisdom I can exactly share with the crowd off of this game. It was just kind of one of those silly ones where I think my opponent valued something that I didn't, and I was able to exploit that. Pull out a victory when I think if he had been in my head would not have been possible.
I guess the lesson there is just do your math.
Yeah. Round three, I played against Corey Burns, one of the many great Canadians that I love to hang out with when I go to cons. He was playing Scorn. The last time we played was actually at Lock and Load last year. And he was playing Legion back then. But he had Makeda 2 and I think some kind of wacky Archidon like Zadesh list. Like Imperial Warhost. I can't remember what the other list is. Spoiler, he plays Makeda.
You don't say.
And I believe this was on Breakdown. I get to go first. And I shove those raiders so deep up in him that Breakdown 0 equals 0, right? I'm not going crazy.
Yeah, that's right. No, that's standoff.
Oh, then I meant standoff. Let me fix my notes. Basically, I define the line of scrimmage as inside his own home zone with my raiders while everything else gets to set up. And I throw so much stuff into him. He just gets bamboozled. And I largely table him. I kill like most of his swordsmen, Malik Karn, and I've lost like the raiders. None of the champs. It's been really solid. But and I'm super up on scenario. I think I'm like 3-0. But I misposition a bear handler such that he can land four of his swordsmen on me, and they still have mini feet. So Makeda goes, she walks into the exact proper position, dash, feet. The swordsmen go, mini feet, the four charge onto me, and it's like a 50-50 with vision, because I'm on no transfers, and he just gets it. Yeah, I could have just denied him the 50-50, and at that point he has to try and kill the Glacier King, but then, and even if he does, I think I have both sets of bears, all of my champs, and still a couple raiders left, and all of my support pieces, and I'm super up on scenario. So I just need to play a little bit more conservatively there. I guess it's kind of like the flip shot of what happened last game, where I didn't see an angle that my opponent did because they knew their list better than I knew their list, and they were able to pull the trigger on a run, and it went right.
What would have saved you there? Like just holding Madrak further back or just being more conservative in your Fury spend?
It's kind of hard to be conservative with Fury spend in a one beast list.
Also on a 5 Fury caster.
Yeah. And like I needed all my Fury to kill the Glacier King. So Madrak could have been a little bit back. He used his axe to clear the path for the Glacier King to land on Moloch. Like I said, so I probably could have been about a half inch back, and then maybe he lands one last swordsman. And then I could have, I had a bear handler that I could have physically walked to like right in front of Madrak such that he didn't have landing spots. And then he probably loses another and lands maybe two, maybe one, and then the assassination just doesn't work. And so I didn't even think about, his assassination odds. I was like, oh, there's no way he can get to me. My Glacier King's right there. And I just didn't kind of like process that like dash plus feet plus power swell would equal death.
Uh-huh.
Like it was a very narrow window, like over a wall in between models. Like it was just one of those things that actually I think part of it was since I play trolls, I don't really like think about the charge lanes of what's it called? Small base models. And so I just took one look at the gap and I was like, oh, there's no way I could get a troll through there. There's no way he's getting a swordsman through there. I don't know how much of it was that, but there were little optimizations I could have done that basically would have taken the assassination off the table. And I was spanking him pretty hard just because I don't think he had the gear to handle what I had, but he got the assassination because he's more experienced with his Makeda list than I am. Core is a total pleasure to play with, super chill.
Yeah, I played him last year in the first round of Iron Gauntlet. Super gracious opponent, ton of fun. It's now about 5:30 and you're gearing up for round 4, or no, is it later than that?
I think it would have been later than that. I think it was like after dinner. I think it was like 6 o'clock.
Okay.
Because, like, I don't think we finished until, like, 11:30
for
5 rounds. Yeah, it was pretty bad. But, so, round 4, I can't remember because my phone died. I'd have to, like, figure it out.
But you're down to the X1 bracket now, and, like...
Yeah, and so, Jaden's XO, I'm X1, Chris is X1. So, basically, we're just trying to see who loses less. So, round 4, I become the pair down or the pair up. Somebody's paired down into me, and that's Van Koopmans. I believe I know he's Canadian, but I don't know if it's Vancouver or Calgary or where, but he's Western Canadian. And he's playing minions. He's got Malak, and I can't remember if it was Arcadius or Rask, but I knew I was going to play Madrak. I was prepared for this ever since I played Brett at LVO. Scenario was recon. He drops Malak, I drop Madrak, I win the roll off, and I just grounded out. The Raiders, I've been really liking the Raiders. I did the double champs for a stint, but I think the Raiders are superior. They handle going second a lot better, and when you go first, you define the line of scrimmage such that you have a screen that's really hard to get through, because you can't trample through it. They're def 15, tough, steady, arm 16. Like, it's super obnoxious to chew through. And so it's just kind of like a general slog where his gators, they're what, mat 6? So even with rerolls, they need to hit 9s and 10s to hit my models in melee if he can't get off immortality. And so we just grind it out, and I'm slowly building a scenario advantage. First I go a little bit ahead, then he catches up, then I start going ahead, and he just starts running out of gas. And eventually, it's like super short clock, because I went into the tank on some unnecessary stuff, and I took a bathroom break on my own clock at the beginning of the game. But I think by the end of the game, he had like one Wrassler, Maelok, and like 3 Gatormen to like Glacier King, all of my champs, all of my Creel Stone, Fellcaller. Like the only thing, basically the only stuff I had lost is the Raiders and maybe one unit of Bears. And so he was just like running out of pieces, and I was slowly maneuvering to either force a scenario victory or for him to give me an assassination out, and I won.
Okay, how low did your clock wind up getting? Because, like, just thinking, you know, when you said, oh, clock was getting low, I took a bathroom break on my time, etc. Like, wait, isn't the matchup Maelok versus Madrak? That's, like, the one matchup where, like, you stay in that until your bladder explodes because you're going to need every second.
It was sub 3 minutes. I think it was like minute and a half. I think by the time I actually shipped my clock at the end, it might have been like 40 seconds. But I really had to poop. That hotel food went right through me. And I didn't need to poop when we were doing list selection. But by the time we had rolled for sides and started deploying, I needed to poop. We were running so far behind, we couldn't pause the clock. Oh my god, we should totally do an episode on like what's going to be the least upsetting for your stomach when you go to a con.
Yeah, con diet.
Anything at a hotel?
Just vodka and all you can eat seafood buffet. That's how I roll.
Sure.
But actually the food was surprisingly like it was not amazing, but like it was only like $8 for a burger, which is like really cheap considering like a hotel. Like that would be like $15 at Vegas.
Plus it cleans your colon right out.
Ooh.
Joop, joop, joop.
Oh, there's something wrong with their onions. I don't know what it was. They were not right. Didn't stop me from eating them, but they were not right.
We've talked about burgers and onions.
Oh my god. So, somebody actually gave me props on that episode. I don't remember who it was. I think I had been drinking at that point. I think I invited them on to talk about cheese dreams.
Hot cheese. <Lord. laughs>
but yeah, so I win. So I'm 3-1. Chris is 3-1 as well. He won his game. And we go into the final round, and I get paired into one of our semi-locals, but not really at all locals, Andrew Abernathy. Out of SAC. And he's playing Scorn. He's got Rasheth, and I don't really care what. I know he's playing Rasheth. And I put down Kolgrima. I think Madrak would have been the slightly better choice if, at this point, it was like 9 o'clock at night. I had been there since like 8 in the morning.
Waiting for a tournament that starts at 1.
And I think theoretically, Madrak. In the Creel Company, or not Creel Company, in Storm of the North with the Glacier King concealment bonus is better because you can like spread out the champs and like position right, and eventually Rasheth runs out of gas because you just like run Jackhammer down one of the CG Animatraxes and they can't charge in. But like it requires you to play really well and really smart, or it's like a total blowout. And I knew I couldn't play it. So I play Kolgrima because, like, I know I've got a shot with her. Like, I don't want to say 50-50, but it's around there if you can do it right. But you have to like set things up to bully right. It's really helpful if you go first. Spoiler alert: I do not go first.
I don't know why you gave up going first. It felt like a gimme when you won the roll.
When did I give up going first? What? I'm getting like secondhand sleepiness just from like thinking about how exhausting Lock and Load was.
Wow.
What's it called? But maybe I did go first. God, now you're tying me up. But there's basically a turn where I've got what I think is a really good play. So one of his Siege Animatronics is behind his themes wall. And I've got a place where I can walk my bomber into a forest, lob bombs at both of his extoller soul hordes, one of which is on a hill, but I'll have puppet strings. And I can put two clouds down and feet. And so the one turtle can't get over the wall. The other one physically can't see my bomber. And none of his stuff can, or the stuff that was in the aura can't shoot. And I decided to pull the trigger, but I missed the one on the hill, even with puppet strings. It was boosted 11. Miss. So he's able to get... I think he tramples one Siege Animatronic to me and charges the other. Or no, one has to walk because it was behind the wall. And so over the course of his turn, because the bomber didn't kill the Soul Ward, he's able to kill the bomber with the Animatronics. And then with some of his guys that were off to the side where I couldn't catch them in feet, he's able to CRA the Mauler down to one box. And I basically have to kill both of his CG Animatronics. And I kill one, and I leave the other one on one box. And so I just concede then and there. It would have been pretty tricky for me to make it, even if I had killed both the Animatronics, just because... all my beasts were maxed out on Fury, so I effectively had no transfers against a gun line. Turns out that's pretty hard for a 14-15 Warcaster with 15 boxes to survive.
Wait, is that a spoiler?
I mean, we just called it there. I let him play out his turn as, like, killing as much stuff as he could and, like, trying to score out to see if he could make the next day, because 1x and 1 was going to make it in. And I always feel bad when it's like I concede and therefore physically stop you from scoring the points that you would have otherwise scored. So we play it out. But yeah, Andrew was another. Everyone was a treat to play against this weekend. I think the game wasn't particularly enjoyable, but that's because we were all like sleepy brained at this point. I just found it physically unpleasant to play. Just like the act of thinking hurt. And I'm sure Andrew felt the same way after. 13-hour day of War Machine. I love War Machine, but not quite that much. And so I think at that point, Chris wins his game. I believe he ends up 12th, and I end up 13th. So therefore, I lose the shark bet. And so if I had beaten Andrew, I would have gotten 7th. So I wouldn't have made it to day 2, but I would have actually gotten War Machine weekend points, which would have been nice, but c'est la vie. But so I lose the shark bet. For any of you on the Trollbloods Facebook group or friends with me on Facebook, you'll have seen the photo already. I wore that thing all day. I show up, I think, like 9:30. I kind of, like, slept in late to do something. Oh, yeah, I think I just randomly watched You've Got Mail. I forgot how, like, wholesome of a rom-com that was. Like, why can't we go back to that?
Oh, we could. It's just no one makes those movies anymore that's not a Christian-themed.
Like, ride. Why can't we just, like... de-age Tom Hanks with like the blood of virgins and CGI and like have him make more wholesome rom-coms. That's what I want. I don't want him like to be this like creepy Steve Jobs wannabe in some bad Emma Watson like sci-fi dystopia film.
Emma Watson's just a horrible actress.
That was a very specific side reference, by the way.
Yes.
It's the last movie I can think of Tom Hanks being in.
You know, I forgot, honestly, he was in that film until you just brought it up, because that film was incredibly forgettable.
Yeah. I never saw it. I just know that it exists.
Oh, I had the poor fortune to see that.
Oh, yeah, me too. It's just filled with bad plot decisions. Oh, my God.
The all-seeing eye of social media. It's just like a Dark Mirror episode, except even worse written. Ooh.
Oh, God. It was... there's so many things about how computers work they didn't understand. It was very frustrating. Anyways, back to the amazing War Machine Mark in a Shark Suit event.
Where did the Tom... Oh, because I watched... You've Got Mail.
Watching
great film. Movie. Great film.
It is a good film. Didn't age as well as it could have.
If it's on Netflix, I disagree. I think it aged. Like, just because that stuff isn't like...
Just because that stuff
isn't relevant anymore. I think the concept of like a pen pal like is still poignant in a sense. Like imagine it just being like anons on 4chan that find love.
I really don't, but I can.
I'm just saying, I think it's a timeless tale. And Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan, they'll always be in my heart.
That was a super, super profitable movie for both of them.
Was it actually? I don't know.
That movie, at the time, I'm a little older than you. That movie was a huge hit.
I remember it being popular. I just don't know if they got any residuals or anything off of it. But okay.
This is a replacement for a food talk.
I mean, I still want to talk about food because I love food, but
I just want to play catch with Tom Hanks and have him tell me he loves me. Sorry, where were we? So day two, I've got to wear the shark suit for IG and for Masters. So Masters semifinals rolls around. I cheer on Jaden v. Brandon. There were a couple of minor errors in that game. It was such a wacky game.
You and Brandon had the biggest bromance I've ever seen at last year's Lock and Load, by the way.
Oh, we love each other. But I get along with Jaden well, too. And he was playing that sweet Grim 1 list, so I couldn't complain. There was a bit of a kerfuffle over the return fire stuff where he was triggering it off of melee attacks, which I feel really bad that I didn't immediately catch, because I was half asleep, and Jesus Christ, that shark suit was super hard to see things out of. until I felt it was okay to take the hood off, I basically couldn't see or hear anything, and it was very distracting. But so I mean, that was just an unfortunate thing that happened. But I think the Grim list, I think if the return fire stuff didn't happen, then Brandon probably won that game. At least if he played. So he played. Brandon played Brett in the next round, and he just feeded on bottom of one to kill both of his Throgs and get up in his face. And I think he could have done the same thing to the battle engine list. And the battle engine list never gets to enter the scenario, and it would have a hard time on attrition. I don't know. Jaden goes on to the finals. I try cheering that on, but I don't want to intrude on the stream because it's a stream game. So I kind of just stay away, because I just feel odd about being a shark on stream.
You would have been that shark guy for the rest of your life.
Dude, people were calling me Mark the Shark all
just
weekend.
Like how Chris Davies is active player forever.
Oh, I thought he was an alcoholic.
Well, also that.
But so I cheerlead Brandon's game, since I don't really have any other games to cheerlead yet. And it's just a funny game between him and Brett.
This is Brett Fogel.
Yeah, yeah. So it's Ostrom versus Maylock. Ostrom feats on bottom of one to kill both of his Throgs, and it turns into a clown fiesta, and eventually Brett just runs out of gas, in large part due to the fact that he can't disrupt all of Brandon's heavies, because he doesn't have his Throgs. And then Jaden wins the whole thing, gets his ticket to War Machine Weekend. And I don't know if he was already qualified for IG, but he ends up bowing out of the IG. I think he was super stressed from playing on stream. I think it was a real nail biter against Jeff. I was watching it through my phone, but I didn't have the sound on, so it was kind of hard to tell. But it looked like it went pretty close to the buzzer, and it was a bit of a nail biter. Jeff threw away a bunch of stuff to get a super early scenario advantage, and there was a lot of work to stop him from winning on scenario. But yeah, so IG rolls around, and since Jaden dropped, the only person I can cheer for is Chris. So he's got three rounds today and another potential two tomorrow because of the amount of people who qualified and showed up.
It was at least enough for five rounds.
Yeah. And in part due to the Masters running a bit behind, and in part just Lock and Load in general, what was supposed to start at 1 o'clock starts at 3:30.
Yeah, standard Lock and Load late.
And so what was Chris's first round opponent? I'm blanking on the name. English player Signar. I think he just won Welsh Masters. But Borka 2 into Haley 3. It goes back and forth. Chris is well up on scenario, I think, pretty comfortably. But there's an assassination run on him, and Chris, he misunderstands how self-sack works, and he promotes instead of self-sacks on a force hammer. The Creel Stone gets force hammered into something, and he thinks for whatever reason, whatever gets slammed is considered collateral and therefore not an attack and therefore not self-sackable. So he turns his own Creel Stone off, and he lives with one box, and he turns around and he kills Haley 3.
Just for the record, that is not at all how that can work.
Yeah.
I mean, technically, Haley 3 is also immortal because, you know, time goes.
Well, he is allowed to promote there.
He is allowed to promote. Self-sack is absolutely optional, but being slammed is not collateral damage.
Yeah, no. I caught it and informed him after the game. But that was just a moment of silliness where I was like, oh, God.
You're just sitting there in your shark suit like, what did you do?
Yeah. I should have worked out a secret signal, except that wouldn't have been sportsmanlike.
You could have just started yelling, "You're doing it wrong." That's what I.
You fool! Yeah. But apparently his opponent had like calc'd it on odds machine, and it was like a 78%er, assuming the Creel Stone dies.
Ooh.
Hmm.
But yeah, that was just a silly game to watch. Borka was somewhat up on scenario. He could have just like run away and thrown things in his face if he didn't have the assassination run off. Round two was against Michael Ireland on Recon. Borka into what's it called? Alara. And I thought on paper that this was going to be a terrible matchup for Borka. But Chris pulled it out really well. I think it might actually be an advantage matchup after watching it. But with his feet, he was able to control the terms of engagement. And even though he accidentally threw away his fell collar, he was able to just rip apart Alara like crazy. And eventually it ended up with, and this was Recon, I think I already said that. It ended up with Borka being on Alara's flag and Alara being on Borka's flag, but the trolls were able to contest and the elves weren't, so trolls won on scenario. Very interesting game. Round three, Chris plays against, spoiler alert, ultimate Iron Gauntlet winner, Pat Dunford. And I don't remember what his other list was, but he drops Heretic, Chris drops Borka, and he just boxes the Grimkin in. Like, they basically never get to, like, toe into, like, anything. I think they like have a couple of gremlin swarms contesting the outlast zones, but like the flags, his flag is so jammed up that he's never going to be able to hold it. The troll's flag, with Borka counter charge, gremlin swarms can't go into it, and so Chris gets a pretty meaty scenario advantage. He ends up losing his entire battle group and most of his raiders, and he has a play where he can just straight win the game if he can crit smite two skin and moans out of his zone, and he doesn't do it. And so one skin and moans gets furied up by the heretic and just, I think it two shots him. And so he doesn't make day two. I believe the ultimate roster of four was Banky, Jeff Everett, Pat, and Aaron Whale. And then from there, I mean, the rest of it was pretty much streamed, or at least two of the games were. And then I guess this can kind of segue into the lock and load time issues that I think we have been hinting at throughout this. But Jeff had a flight at like 4 o'clock. The IG finals were supposed to start at 9 o'clock, which means with two rounds, they were supposed to be done by like 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock, which would be exactly enough time to make his flight. But in lock and load fashion, between them wanting to do some kind of stream beforehand and just like running behind because there's a billion things going on, the IG didn't start on the final day until like 11 o'clock. And so Jeff basically had to concede the third, fourth place match to Tim. I would have played it out anyways, but I think that would have been really bad if Jeff had actually made it to the finals table and had to choose between actually making his flight home or playing in the IG finals.
Right.
Yeah, that would have super sucked. That happened before too, by the way, in previous lock and loads.
And so we were discussing this before the podcast.
Here's the fun thing. That lock and load late, like running that far behind schedule, you know how I say like book your flight so that you have room for a comfortable dinner after whatever it is you're doing? Yeah, turns out when an event runs 2.5 hours late, it beats even that rule.
Yeah, but I think lock and load has a bit of a problem with, well, first of all, I don't know what's going on, because like sometimes it's events interfering with their ability to run things on time, but other times it just seems like they're straight running multiple hours late. And I mean, I've been to a few like different regions of US like War Machine tournaments, and like nowhere else is like that. Nowhere else is like lock and load. Maybe I'm just spoiled by Will and Tyson, where like if they're they're like a half an hour late at the end of the day, they apologize to you. But like two plus hours late, like there's no apology, there's no warning. It's just like, oh, you should have expected it. It's lock and load.
To be honest, I've been to conventions all over the world, and they're running behind is as bad as anywhere I've seen.
Yeah, I don't. Would you say it's worse than the average War Machine event?
Or? Oh, for sure. I mean, it didn't used to be, but it's turned into being definitely worse than the average War Machine tournament I go to. I mean, the first few years of Lock and Load, which honestly were fantastic conventions, they were not necessarily on time, but they were more or less on schedule. And I remember, you know, there was one of those early years of the 4 or 5 or whatever it was. I'm kind of forgetting at this point in time. Where I had to leave slightly early to catch my flight. But that was the exception. Like the other times had been totally fine. But now it seems to be like the modus operandi, like they're just running really late with all the tournament stuff.
And this is another thing, which I think might kind of like marry with the problem of being late, is they intermingle events in ways that I don't think are appropriate. Like the Company of Iron stuff is literally right next to like the Champions event, or like the main stage that's in the tournament hall for some reason is where they're running the Iron Brush event or whatever it's called, literally in the middle of Masters, like blaring stuff on the speakers, goofing around. Last year it was in another room, and even still it was like impossible to hear your opponent over the noise. Maybe I was just more sensitive to it this year because I have something weird going on where I can't hear out of one ear. Like, it's getting mostly better now. I think the flights have shooken something loose. Shooken's a word, right? I'm making it a word.
In Trump's America, any word's what you want it to be, sir.
But, like, I was already having problems communicating with my opponent effectively. Or opponents. I had to like ask people to repeat things because I'm just like, I'm hard of hearing. Treat me like I'm an 80-year-old invalid, which honestly nowadays I'm starting to feel like tender age of 26. Jesus Christ.
You're such a child.
Yeah, I had that last year too, like round 4, I think, of Masters, you know, and
it was whatever the last round of the day was for.
Yeah, an announcement kicks up and, you know, I'm sitting like 4 or 5 feet away from my opponent. And there's something going on the stage, and like we literally can't hear each other. We have to pause the clock and like just wait for this to end or for someone to tell them to shut off the loudspeakers on the other side of the room. And the loudness and the intermingling, like the haphazard intermingling of events and all that stuff, like that's all new phenomena at Lock and Load. You know, I attended like 2012, 2013 when they were still in the Red Lion. And the tournaments were, you know, the attendance was smaller, but not like a ton. And the tournaments were segregated, like the big tournaments were off in their own rooms. And then you had the more casual stuff like the Speed Machine down in the general area. But even then, you know, it was broken up sensibly. Keynotes and stuff like that were all at their own times. And then, you know, they move to the Maiden Bower. The con stuff is still, or the tournaments rather, are still up in their own isolated room. It's very quiet. You're just doing tournament things. And then they move it down. Like the first year, 2012 and 2013 were just magnificent, superlative events. I loved those lock and loads very dearly.
Yes, I had a fantastic time with those as well.
Yeah, 2014, they moved to the Maiden Bower, and like, it's still pretty good. There's a lot of events. You can, you know, you can play basically continuously if you want in some kind of structured event or another. And, you know, your tournament stuff is off its, in its own area where you get the quiet, and like, it's a bigger space. You know, their manpower is a little more stretched, so there's like a 30-minute delay. And then after 2014, those issues just progressively escalated from year to year, you know, to the point where neither Ben nor I are surprised when you told us before the mics, you know, were rolling that events ran 2.5 hours behind. And we're both like, oh, yeah, that's normal there. And that's like by War Machine standards, you know, I think the longest I ever waited was at a last chance qualifier at War Machine weekend where like Douyu borked the pairings for 190 people. And that was like an hour. Nothing else comes close to how far behind schedule lock and loads competitive events run.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean I think the biggest sin, if you would, in my mind that I think that they should address is, unlike a lot of the other conventions, there seems to be a complete lack of what they used to call in the restaurant biz a sense of urgency. Because at other conventions, people want to start on time because they want to end on time. They realize that, you know, people have things they want to do in addition to the pleasure of playing War Machine. And at Lock and Load, it seemed, and I don't know if it's just not enough staff or they just completely lack the sense of urgency for these sort of things, but they seem very willing to let it slip. Like things come up. And they willingly just be like, oh, let's kick it back a little bit. Let's kick it back a little bit. Oh, yeah, sure. You know, like, we'll take care of this other thing first. And that's really frustrates me when I'm, you know, wanting to go to a competitive event.
And they also run the Masters and the Champions at the same time. So you have to choose one to run in, which I'm not a fan. I think out of all the cons out there that I've been to for War Machine, which is admittedly not the full breadth of what the United States has to offer, but I think I have, like, a good smorgasbord of like different sizes I've been to, from like small to medium to massive. I think Lock and Load has some of the best spread of like, we've got something for everybody here, but I think their time management is really off. And I think the fact that they intermingle stuff that has no business being intermingled damages the individual events.
Yeah, and, you know, it's frustrating to me because, like I said, the early Lock and Loads were still some of my favorite conventions that I've ever been to, and I had a fantastic time at them. And, you know, I mean, I was honestly even less competitive back then. I was just having a great time playing the game and hanging out and doing all the stuff they had.
Yeah.
But everything also ran on time. Like, you know, they had, even without the computer or everything else, like, they had a pretty down system, which, you know, was a system that other people were aspiring to. And, you know, the judges, you know, this was back with Hacksaw and the other people, which I know aren't there anymore. But, you know, the judges would be like, hey, why aren't your pairings in? If your pairings aren't in by X, like, we're moving on without you, and you guys dropped. You know, they were firm, and it worked. Like, you know, they didn't have to do that, but everyone knew, you know, like, where the line was.
Yeah.
And it was a great experience because, you know, when you're there, it's, you know, beholden to the judging to make sure the event runs smoothly. And, you know, it also, I think, made it easier for the staff because everything worked as it was scheduled to work. And you were done, you know, close to when you were supposed to be done. And you started when you were supposed to start. And, you know, everything just lined up easier.
Well, and that's the other odd thing about Lock and Load is, you know, for me, I'm not super enthusiastic about the con these days. And, you know, Ben, just like you, you know, that some of my fondest convention memories are of Lock and Load. But, you know, for me, and this will segue into the next thing we want to talk about, which is maximizing your enjoyment of your, like, your convention or tournament experience. These days, Lock and Load doesn't offer a ton for people like me. you know, my main interests, obviously, at this point, going to any given convention, there's a fair amount of folks I know and that I, you know, super enjoy getting to catch up with, have a beer with, chat the game with. But like the primary draw for me is competitive events of one stripe or another. Like, I love to play in tournaments. I love to have something on the line and just get those rapid fire games where people are like trying to win and, you know, compete. Lock and Load offers shockingly few competitive events. Like, if you weren't already qualified for Iron Gauntlet, you got to pick champions or masters and have your one, maybe 1.5 day tournament, and then that's it. That's all there is for you.
Well, if you won the Masters of the Champs, you get into IG, but...
Right, but, you know, I'm guessing, 127 non-Jaden people, that's it. That's all there is.
I mean, it, like, 35 of those were IG people already, but yeah. Yeah, it definitely didn't feel great as a competitor to be somebody who wasn't already qualified for IG. And to go there, like, you play on Friday and then you do absolutely nothing for the other 2 days. Like, you can watch a machine and hang out like I did, which was fun. But I wish, actually, here's what I would like, because I think they're trying to do a system where every year the IG oscillates between Masters and Champions format. So I think next year it's going to be a Champions format IG, right? They do the last chance qualifier of the same type that the IG will be. So, like, they would only run the Masters, right? And then the next day, they'll run the other event type. So this year, it was a Masters IG, so they would do Masters on Friday that finishes up with the top four cut into the IG on Saturday, and that continues on like it did this weekend. But instead of having the other format, in this case, Champions, on Friday as well, put it on Saturday for the people who bomb out of Masters and aren't in IG. The downside there being that the Champions would, or the off format would not have the caliber of player that the other one would have, because all the IG players would be playing in that. But I think it would give something to do for like the up and coming and expiring players, which I think I personally am at this moment.
Absolutely agreed. And I'd love to, like, for me, I'm not super pumped about Lock and Load in the convention season when I think there's one tournament there. But if I'm going for, you know, a 3 day weekend and I have two big tournaments that's, you know, 90 plus people, I can get genuinely excited about that. If it's one and, you know, my price of admission is bumming around town for 2 days, no bueno.
Yeah. Also, one thing that I'm continuously disappointed with is the complete lack of team tournament support that I keep seeing.
Oh my God. Yes. If Lock and Load had a team format event, I would be so down for that.
Because, I mean, you know, if you look at the, you know, the world competitive scene, you know, is really defined by the World Team Tournament. And I quite like the event. I think it's really good. We've obviously talked about it a fair amount. We have somebody here who's been on it, but, you know, we don't like to talk about that anymore. But, you know, like, it's a great format. And I think that team tournaments add a lot to the viability of the game. And I think that by having nothing that supports a team tournament, you also have a lot less slots in general available for enjoyment of playing competitive games.
Yeah, well, that's one great thing about, you know, a team tournament is if you have a, you know, if you have a 32 team event, you've just provided slots for 160 players that fits in approximately the same amount of time as a 5-6 round tournament.
I don't know. It just kind of feels like right now, if you're going for the competitive stuff, you don't feel like playing Iron Arena. You don't want to be going unless you've qualified for IG. And like, I'm trying to like figure out whether I'm going to go next year. I might, just because there's so many Canadians I love to see, and that's going to like be my best way to see all of them. Because some of them will come to LVO, but if I want to catch all of them, mm-hmm. Lock and Load is the place to be, because it's just like the perfect even meeting ground between like Calgary and California.
Well, and that's something like one of the axes I want to break this down on is knowing what you're going for in a convention or large event. And I see a couple of axes, like you've really got to have it you know, to get the most out of an event, you've really got to have it buttoned up for yourself, like what your priorities are, pick events that match that, or pick schedules at events that really facilitate that. So like the big areas I see are competition, socializing with friends, playing games, which is not necessarily exclusive with competition, but for some people, they just go and play pickup games in Iron Arena at any convention. Not my
personally. I think I've mentioned this multiple times on the podcast, but there's so much mental overload to playing. I can't imagine just playing for the hell of it. Like, maybe I just need to like figure out how to get into a mindset where I really don't care and I don't try and I don't check distances and I don't do dice math and see if I can make it work that way.
Mine's much simpler. I played my last Iron Arena game against someone I didn't know, like, ever. And Iron Arena has a strong tendency, in my experience, toward playing things like Kane 2 with no clock and no scenario. You know, it's not to say you can't have fun there, but, like, there's a qualitative difference in the games for me. So that's why I'd list it separately. So competition, meeting and socializing and hanging out with friends, playing games as distinct from competition, panels, staff interviews, etc., hobby events like the Painting Lounge at War Machine Weekend, the Painting Lounge at Lock and Load, the painting seminars at Adepticon. You know, there's a whole world of hobby events.
And I think Lock and Load, out of all of those, has like the most broad coverage. I think that's like its number one like shining success.
Yeah, and I have to say, I mean, I also give them tons of props for the fact that they have all those theme tables out, because I look forward to seeing those every year, even though I played on most of them, just because they're so beautiful to play on. And there's, you know, just fun to go out and, you know, play on a, you know, beautifully set up table like that.
They've got all the right events. They just need to figure out how to separate them. And for the competitive stuff where, like, timing really matters, like, get that fixed.
Well, it's also, you know, Privateer Press, and I agree, you know, in principle, like, this should be the premier competitive event for the game, and it just doesn't feel like it's meeting that standard, you know? And it sucks to, you know, see somebody put all that time and effort in there and then just have such sort of lack of attention to detail running that event. You have people coming from all over the world. You know, you have the prestige of winning, like, a, you know, this premium event, and, you know, there's just doesn't feel like they're putting the same amount of effort into it.
The gauntlet is super dope, by the way. I'm not sure. Oh, no,
their prizes are amazing. I mean, I would love to have the privilege of winning one of those things to put in my house to annoy everybody. But, you know,
it's a straight up infinity gauntlet. It's super hilarious.
So rad looking.
I think what you're saying, like, showing up as a participant, you almost feel like you have more invested in this than the people putting on the show.
What?
I don't disagree with that, because like I've seen the event staff and they look pretty harried. Like it's not like they're just like sitting around like, oh, I don't give a shit.
So my criticism would be not that I believe they aren't putting in the effort, because I know they are. It's not like I think that, you know, they were sitting around getting drunk and not bothering to do anything. I mean, I assume they were getting drunk, but they were getting their work done. It just feels like there's a layer of, you know, professionalism, if you want to call it that, or just cohesion in how they run an event that's missing that used to be there. And going to other conventions where that's still there, it feels weird to go to Privateer Press's, you know, own inline con and be like, hey, like, why is it that I went to a con at some college and everything was run twice as well as what I'm seeing here? Like, it's really not that high of a standard to hit, in my opinion, especially when you have staff who do this actually for a living, you know? And it's not like the players don't want that. It's not like they're fighting you being like, oh, no, don't run the thing on time, you know? So that's what baffles me with their running of the timing of the running of the high-end competitive events.
Well, there's a couple of things in that. I mean, for one, you know, private, it's no secret that Privateer Press has been struggling with staffing on Lock and Load since the dissolution of the press gang, you know, because that convention is all hands on deck for the company. And then beyond that, to have no volunteer staff and, you know, just the X number of people you have, you know, from your office or, you know, from remote locations, and that's it. You know, that's kind of rough. And I think that speaks too to Mark, why you see them like starting to get wore down is because they are running the entire thing. There's another thing in there, which is the prestige factor. And like, for me, I have no suppositions or demands on the prestige of the event. Like, you know, the ostensible prestige of a convention is a total non-factor for me. You know, the factors I consider are you running the kinds of tournaments I want to play in? Are they attached to a circuit? You know, am I going to get good competition? That's consideration A. Next one, am I going to see my friends there? Am I going to have a good time socializing with the folks? After that, can I get games with like some kind of competition? Like War Machine Weekend, I want to say 2016 or 2015, I bombed out of the LCQ, wasn't a super huge fan of the other tournaments they had scheduled, so I just went into the scramble room, started drinking, and started playing tournaments, and fell asleep at 3 a.m. every night, and woke up at 9 a.m. to do the same again. I think I played something like 25 tournament games over the weekend, all told, and that was a blast. Like, that's what I'm looking for. And, you know, for me, like, Mark, I've had similar considerations as you, like, and, you know, what I really want to see for Lock and Load is for them to be the kind of event that a person like me really wants to attend, you know, to have events that run on time, to have a diversity of competitive options. And like, it's guaranteed if I go there, I'm going to see my friends like nationally, internationally, from everywhere. But I really want the events also. You know, for myself, like, I'm looking at it, okay, my values being what they are, I probably won't go back unless I'm in a circuit if things remain as they are. But, like, you kind of have to do that process for yourself on every single event. Like, you know, the ones that hit all the boxes for me are something like Irish Masters, where you're basically playing all day, and then you go out, like, the entire tournament picks up, the doors close, and then everybody goes to the pub. Or like, and you know, something like the Phoenix Open is very much in that vein. Or if I'm looking at a convention, something like War Machine Weekend or Kingdom Con, where there are basically always events on tap for you, and you're going to get those friends, and the environment really facilitates competition. That's something I seek out. Oh, another aspect I forgot for like what to consider that I see is store, like getting event exclusives, getting early releases, etc. That's actually one of the strongest things about Lock and Load. But for somebody like me, that holds literally zero appeal. I do not care. I do not care one whit.
Oh, God. People keep on asking me to ninja for them. And it...
I'm not going to skip a tournament to go stand in a line.
Hey, well, it's not just which, that, but...
Why didn't you ninja for me, man? What's up with that?
Yeah.
Ben, I watched you skip almost all your events at War Machine Weekend when we went together to go stand in a line.
What? No way. No way. Not all of my events.
You made the old man tournament. That's true. What do you guys really look for your events? I mean, I think, Mark, you and I have really similar priorities, but I'm just curious.
So I guess my number one, like, pass or fail criteria is this a Will and Tyson event? If it's a Will and Tyson event, I will do everything in my power to go, because Will and Tyson are like the, like, it doesn't even matter how they run it. They're just going to run it so well that, like, I'm going to want to be there. I just know it. Like, they have been so consistently on point. Like, and I, this is why I always try and, like, be careful in my criticisms of like other like events not run by them, is because I have a hard time telling if it's like legitimately a problem, like whether like that con is the problem, or whether it's just I've become so used to Will and Tyson events as a California person that I am holding people to an unreasonable standard.
Right. You've supped on the divine nectar. What is all this swill?
I think LVO and Kingdom Con are so far above and beyond other cons. Like, it's not that other cons aren't great. It's just when I have gone to LVO and Kingdom Con, they're like my Christmas and my Easter. Like, they're that perfect. Like, I don't think I've ever had, like, a really bad time at either. Well, Vegas has terrible weather. It can get so dry and, like, ugh.
Have you been to a War Machine weekend?
No, I've been, like, not wanting to go until I actually qualify. I almost went this year because I was waitlisted, but...
It's worth going either way. And, you know, this is something, like, there's not a the painting con. Like, this con does painting, or, you know, not all cons are created equal. And some cons, like, War Machine Weekend delivers on everything at an extraordinary level. There's a lively and active Iron Arena if you just want games. There are scrambles, like, virtually around the clock if you want competitive games and you're not in a big event. There's the Last Chance Qualifier, basically the world's largest single-player tournament. There's, in previous years, there was an Iron Gauntlet Qualifier. I imagine there'll be champions. There's a prestigious War Machine Weekend Invitational. There's a massive and super cool painting lounge. You know, it's people from all over the country. It's really the bookend to the calendar year for competition. You know, Privateer Press has their store there frequently with pre-releases. There's all the major accessory producers, like, on hand with product right there. You know,
actually, I think I just thought of a criticism for Will and Tyson events. I don't think I've ever seen, like, a particularly interesting scramble at a Will and Tyson event. And I think that's because they're so good at scheduling their competitive events that all the competitive players are too busy playing in actual events to play in scrambles.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
They're so good at running tournaments that their side tournaments aren't as good.
That, boy, that's a great problem to have.
Well, I also think that, I mean, unlike a lot of the other tournaments, they always, like, they hit their cap of people who are really into being in the tournaments. And because the tournaments are well run, people generally don't drop early in the rounds after a loss. They stick around and play because it's fun, so they don't really need the scramblers as much.
Oh god, I'm gonna have to pass that feedback on to Tyson and Will and see what they think about it.
Well, At all ends, there are cons that will offer you everything. Like, Muzon Con is very much in the same vein as War Machine Weekend. You know, you can kind of do everything. It's not as much of a magnet as War Machine Weekend, so you don't get, you know, basically the universal international attendance. But, you know, it's a great place to meet people, especially from the Midwest. Adepticon has a very large draw. There's generally a pretty reliable tournament schedule. Like, you're going to go and you're going to have the two big tournaments if that's your thing. It's a hugely, like, inter-game con. You can do all sorts of things there. So you have alternatives if you're into that. There are cons that kind of cater to everyone, and some of them do have special strengths or weaknesses. And there are cons like... Something like a Phoenix Open has basically no appeal if you're not a competitive player. Still a great event if you're into that. But if you're like a serious painting guy, or, you know, you're just looking for Iron Arena or something like that, or like a store, it's held in a game store, but like if the store experience and the exclusives is your thing, don't even think about it. So like when you're planning out your competitive year, you really have to know what's important to you. And make sure you're going to events that are actually going to fulfill on that.
Thank you for listening to Dominate for Two. Find us on Facebook and Twitter. Got a question or an episode idea? Email us at dominateforTwo.podcast@gmail.com.